Welcome to another special Come to Papa. I am Tom Papa, and my guest today is the delightful and delectable Eugene Mirman. Eugene is a New York-based comedian who has had his own Comedy Central special, provides voices on Adult Swim's Delocated and Bob's Burgers on Fox, and is a regular on HBO's Flight of the Conchords. They still making them?
Nope.
Damn, it was a good show. You were really good on it.
Thank you.
He was voted the best New York City comedian by The Village Voice. And he's Eugene is often performing in non-traditional comedy venues. And he also puts on his weekly show at the Union Hall in Brooklyn called Pretty Good Friends on Sunday nights. He also runs the annual Eugene Mirman Comedy Festival, which puts on great shows while also taking a wry look at mainstream comedy festivals. Do you still do the awards at the beginning of the festival?
We just did. We did that the first year.
You did that first
year. We handed out awards. But we've done lots of other weird, dumb comedy-related things.
So, Eugene, when you are venturing into more non-traditional comedy areas that are maybe out of your comfort zone just to try something new, how often do you think, if I could only be as brave as Tom Papa?
That's how my mornings start. I imagine how brave you are.
Right.
And then I'm like, well, I can't do that, so I'll halvesies. I'll do it halvesies. And then I approach a cabaret space and like, want to have a comedy show? You're going to go out of business if you don't have me.
Now, I've been tracking you, Eugene. We've never met before.
Yeah.
But you're here in New York, and I've always seen you, your progress, and seen you doing stuff, and I'd see your stuff online once in a while. And we never met, but I always felt that you were a really creative, funny guy who I would really like. And then on Twitter one day, I was like, please, somebody, let me be friends with Eugene.
Yeah.
Who can make this happen? And you were like, I can.
Yes, I am one of the top people who can make it happen. Well, I believe Laura Kraft worked on your show, right?
Yes, she did.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're friends with Laura.
Yeah.
She is hilarious.
Yeah, she's super funny.
Man, is she funny. And I've always seen you, and you know, when I started kind of like going over for this interview to see some of the backstory and stuff, because you just have an instinct about certain people. You could tell that they're a little more artistic or they're a little more stuff going on that, you know, that you kind of respect. And I noticed that you went to Hampshire College, where my nephew is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's there now.
Oh, wow.
And it's a really cool place.
It's awesome. I majored in comedy.
Yeah.
You
make your own major.
Yeah, but it's still like, it's work, sadly. I mean, not sadly, but when you first think you're going to a school with no grades and like all this stuff and you get to, and then you get there and you're like, oh, there's like a lot you have to do and you have to be very self-motivated.
Right.
But the process of it, I think, is very similar to the process of becoming a comedian. Like, because you can get a degree and become a doctor and like literally someone walks you through it, but nobody will tell you like, you have to go to this place. It's going to be weird. People will be sort of condescending, but drunk and a little friendly at the end. And then you're like, what is this? How is this my school?
Right.
And so I feel like a lot of the process of Hampshire of like figuring out and getting professors to work with you and just like, you know, there weren't really places to do comedy that much. There was a Chinese restaurant in a nearby town. So I started a night in the basement of my dorm, you know, like I sent out press releases to promote like my final project because I was like, I don't know how to reach people. I bet this is a thing that people do.
Right.
And then when I graduated, I did all those similar things. And I've always found it more fun and easier to like run my own night, book people I like, than like convince clubs. Well, I mean, now it's different because now I can just perform at clubs. But I think when I first got here, when I first got to Boston, it was just easier to do this thing and promote it myself.
Yeah.
And then have it be fun than have somebody just be like, we need your joke to really connect with this really sort of sleepy tourist.
Right.
Like, that's not the only audience.
Yeah.
The only audience isn't sleepy or drunk tourists. There's also just people.
Yeah. It's interesting because because you don't play a lot of like the mainstream clubs in a way.
No.
And
I mean, I do sometimes, but not really.
But yeah, when did you start? You started?
I sort of, my first set was in like after high school in 92.
Okay.
But there'd be like, you know, months between sets and sort of college. But then I guess after college, like around 97-ish is when you, in a way, say I started, though I did do it before that.
Right. And that was in New York or that was Boston?
That was Hampshire and then Boston.
And then Boston.
And then I moved to Boston where I like truly like started going again to a Chinese restaurant, but every day to do comedy.
It's interesting because... Is that the only reason? Was it just to put on your own stuff? Because, like, when you think about comedians, and do you consider yourself an alternative comedian?
I mean, not particularly, but I don't mind it. Like, I think some people specifically do or don't or find it annoying.
Right.
I am sort of just massively neutral to it.
Right.
Like, if someone wants to think of me that way, they're welcome to. But I do feel like I have setups and punchlines.
Yeah.
But it's just not necessarily the same. But a lot of it is essentially. It's just sometimes I'll use pictures.
Right.
The thing at Hampshire was that because I never really had like comedians, to me, I would just do something. And if it made people laugh,
right,
then it became my stand up. So to me, like, alternative comedy is often thought of like it doesn't have a setup or punchline, or it's somehow like bigger than a joke. But to me, I am doing jokes.
Right.
They just sometimes involve playing a clip of audio or showing a picture, or it's weird, or there's a silly thing that happens. But it's still one expectation being broken, and then there is a joke.
Do you find that the audiences, when you put together your own shows, are a little... I was describing that when I'm in an environment where I feel I can try things and do more, that there's actual... I say there's more room on stage. Like, I've got more room to kind of play around.
Yeah.
Do you feel like those venues kind of give you that freedom, or do you think it's...
Well, it
depends on the night, like any other place.
I mean, it sort of depends on what it is. The truth is, I would do the same... Like, the thing that works opening for a band is the same thing that works at Caroline's, to be honest, really.
Yeah.
It's just... the difference slightly is... Though mostly with like doing, say, a show at a place like Bell House in Brooklyn, than at a place like Caroline's, is if someone's coming to a music venue, what's normally a music venue, to see comedy, they most likely know who you are and know what you're about, kind of. And then if you go to a comedy club, they might just be people who want to see comedy, which is totally reasonable. But it's like going to a place that says music and then you love metal and it's folk music.
Right.
You know,
that's a good way to describe it.
And then in general, it'd be just some moderate broad pop.
Right.
Maybe
something by ABBA.
That appeals to everyone.
That everybody loves.
Yeah. I forget the original question other than I'm sort of an alternative comic. I guess
is
the answer.
Well, you know, I've been doing this series since the summer. And when you talk about comedy, and if we do venture into alternative or whatever, your name always comes up under alternative comic. And I always thought the only thing that really seems to make Eugene alternative, I mean, because I play UCB and, you know, I play these different places too. And it seems like they're all kind of, they're kind of mixing up, they're melding together in a way. But when I was thinking about you, I was thinking, I think the only thing that makes people think you're alternative is the building that you're in.
Or really that I think that the process of my career, like, which is that I put out records on music labels. I got to New York, I got passed at a club, and then I used to call in my avails.
Right.
And then they would never call me back. And then I was like, what's the story?
Yeah.
Like, and it was after they saw me at an audition for like Aspen there and they were like, you passed, kid. And I was like, I'm moving to town. Let's do this. And then I called and they literally never called me back. And I was like, I don't understand the process. Like, you asked me to call you.
Right.
And they're like, oh, yeah, no, it's much more complicated than that. And I was like, never mind. Like, I'll just do a different thing.
I'll go somewhere
else.
Yeah.
So I think that what makes me, I mean, in a sense, alternative, and even the word alternative is partially from people doing things in spaces alternative to comedy clubs.
Right. Yeah.
But comedy clubs are a thing, really, of what, the late mid-70s to the mid-90s, when they were like really had a stranglehold. But before that and after, people did comedy in all sorts of spaces. It's not like Lenny Bruce and, you know, Shelley Berman and all these people necessarily started in comedy
clubs. Woody Allen, there were no clubs.
No, and then they were sadly murdered in 1992 as well. But like, comedy clubs are what's weird.
Yeah.
In a sense. I mean, not literally, but you know what kind of.
Yeah, no, I completely do. I think there's also the thing, and why I started kind of poking around and like going to UCB and stuff, especially like in LA when I would be out there for a while. And there is an artistic creativity. There's like people are trying things.
Yeah.
People are. And I don't think alternative is a dirty word, you know, because there does seem to be, I think people are always get uncomfortable when it's something that they don't really understand.
Like,
there'll be a lot of alternative comics that will talk about like going to the Cellar is like an awful experience, and
right,
but they've never done it, and it's the same thing with some of the mainstream comics.
But the Cellar also feels like a really legitimate like comedy place. Like I feel like, yeah, when, like in terms of clubs,
yeah,
like, you know, I mean, I've seen people do really great stuff. I have admittedly seen people clearly do their Tonight Show set from 1987.
Right.
Like, you're watching this thing, and you're like, I don't think anyone cares about cabs anymore. But then I've seen people, like, completely bare their souls in a really interesting, funny way.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's a very legit place, you know, in a sense, more so than just,
yeah,
than, you know, like, random broad.
Right. Then, yeah, then certain... No, when you were at Hampshire, and you were... Were you kind of, like... You know, on your own, kind of figuring out this, you're figuring out your major, you're pouring, yeah, all this comedy insight into it. Were you studying comedy?
I was. I mean, you know, and people sometimes will be like, what do you use of that? And I'm like, hopefully nothing. But I mean, in terms of like the like reading Freud or whatever,
right,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But I did a lot of things like, you know, in a sense, it's not different for people who majored in history or English or philosophy or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just that I always focused a little on comedy. So,
right,
you know, I took writing classes and would write humorous things. I took film classes and video classes and made, you know, comedic stuff.
Right.
I wrote a weekly column for my newspaper. I started a humor club. I started a,
wow,
weekly show. I just did basically anything I could that I thought would help me through experience learn about comedy.
Right.
So, and then that's why my thesis was when our stand-up act, and I'd never quite performed for an hour. I'd certainly maybe done like 15, 20
yeah,
minutes. But I'd hosted a lot and did whatever, you know, I could.
Yeah.
And certainly opened for dirty clowns in weird restaurants.
So
dirty
I had clowns.
Like, literally, I remember a guy like licking, like juggling and licking balls, like,
no,
like juggle balls and being like, I'm a French clown or something. And I was like, oh my God.
I'm next.
What's happening? Yeah. That was, but yeah, so I just did as many things as I could.
Yeah.
And I guess that's sort of...
It's pretty great because there's no... And you're doing it on your own,
yeah,
right? You're not... There's no, like... It's not like going to comedy college and the guy's like, now you have to do this. You're kind of really exploring.
Yeah, you're exploring and you do have professors and there is, like, things that can help you. But, you know, I did a paper on the physiology of laughter for my science requirement.
Right.
Which essentially was totally wrong. But I learned the process of science and I did learn a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But the answer is sort of... that only people only study laughter as it pertains to like psychological disorders.
Uh-huh.
So there isn't really a lot of study of why people actually laugh. There's just like, why do people laugh instead of crying?
Oh, really?
There's like stuff on that.
There's no joy related science.
Yeah. The latest like stuff that I had learned was literally like the guy who inspired Darwin was like some of the latest stuff on comedy. And it was,
jeez,
like clearly scientifically wrong, but a little inspired.
Right. You're listening to Come to Papa on Sirius XM 99. I'm here with my new pal, Mr. Eugene Merman.
Yeah.
Now, Eugene, so when you went into this crazy hippie school of yours,
yeah,
and decided I'm going to go into comedy, you must have been thinking about comedy as a kid or before you
I
got there.
I loved it. I mean, growing up,
yeah,
I listened to, you know, I had all these Bill Cosby tapes. I literally got to put into special ed in sixth grade.
Uh-huh.
Because I, for a book report, lip sync a Bill Cosby bit routine. And I will say I don't know why I did this because I, like, I don't know what made me lip sync a thing and be like, this must be a book report. Or maybe I was like, maybe I can get away with this.
Right. Do you remember which routine it was?
I can't. I mean, it could have been Noah,
like, right,
that bit. I remember loving that. But I had all
awesome
these tapes of that. And in general, you know, I watched so much stand-up in the 80s.
Yeah.
And was, you know, an outcast and loved stand-up.
Right.
But I remember discovering Emo Phillips in maybe seventh grade through some friends.
So,
you know,
funny.
So good. And like Goldthwait. And I remember having Robin Williams live at the Met.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and just all, I just consumed so much stand-up. And,
yeah,
and my parents were, you know, programmers and most of their friends, you know, I'm from Russia. And
right,
so just a lot of, in general, it's just a thing where most immigrant kids and immigrants are like, go into sort of more hard sciences.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, I like stand-up comedy. And, you know, in a
what
sense,
what's wrong with you?
To my parents' credit, they were really, I mean, they admittedly let me go to a college where I studied,
yeah,
comedy. So they were very, very supportive.
That's great. When did you move here? You were a kid, right?
I was four.
Four.
Yeah.
Do you ever go back? Do you have family over there?
I don't really have family. I haven't gone back. I actually really want to go back, but I kind of want to document it. So
right.
I'd like to make it a documentary. So I haven't gone back. And from when I started considering doing it, I was like, oh, I'd like to make this a film.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
I think it'd be pretty interesting. Because I'd love to explore maybe comedy there.
Do they have comedy there?
I think they do, but it might be really weird. I saw this video of a prank show, and it was basically just a guy running up to people and like pushing them over. And it was sort of amazing because it was like unclear what like the legal or even like moral repercussions were.
Right.
And I know they have a lot of weird character stuff. It's sort of like England, where they didn't have quite the kind of stand-up we had from, say, the 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
And so they have some stuff that's insanely broad and some stuff that's the most creative.
Yeah.
You know, their stand-up comes from like doing one-man shows in Edinburgh.
Right.
So they just have totally different development. And I think in Russia, similarly, there's probably stuff that's like very like one-man showy monologues.
Right. Yeah.
And then stuff that's like crazy weird homophobic sketches. If I had to guess.
Right. If you had to nail it down.
And I think it's accurate.
Have you heard there's like there's some guy in Germany, there's like the first stand-up comedian, the first German stand-up comedian.
Oh, really?
He's playing in front of like 40,000 people because he's the only one.
Who will do it in German.
In Germany.
There was a guy in Italy who recently, like probably a year ago,
yeah,
got in trouble for basically swiping America's comedians' one-liners.
No.
Like he was doing like, you know, like Hedberg and Dimitri and Stephen Wright and just all these people and no one knew. And they were just like, what an incredibly clever man.
Oh, no.
It's like, yeah, if you took all the greatest jokes of American comics and did them in Italian,
yeah,
you'd be incredible.
How would they find out?
Yeah.
They'll never know.
Exactly.
So did your family speak Russian in the house?
Yes. Yeah. And I still speak Russian to my parents. Yeah.
Здравствуйте.
Здравствуйте, Tom. That's very good.
До свидания.
До свидания, Tom.
Did it make you feel a little of an outcast in a way?
Yeah.
Because you had parents that weren't like the other parents or that spoke a different language? Or was it a community that kind of...
Well, I mean, I was from Russia during the Cold War.
Right.
So,
during the Rocky movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Rocky came out and they were like, you are from the KGB. And I'm like, I am a child who left. They never really understood the idea of immigration as a child.
Yeah.
And that just... You
just show up.
Yeah, they were just like, you're a terrible spy. And I was like, this would be bad if I had this accent. And I was trying to get government information from other 10-year-olds.
Right. Did you have a lot of friends?
I didn't, I was sort of extraordinarily unpopular until about 11th grade.
Oh, really?
I mean, I had friends, certainly.
Uh-huh.
But I was just very much, it started with, I think, probably being like an immigrant and a bit of an outcast. And then it was just sort of like, I think in first grade, people were like, oh my God, we can all have this enemy.
Right.
And then we can be friends and we're all scared. So.
Oh no.
And then that lasted from year to year until I think kids sort of became a little nicer at the age of 16.
Wow. That must have been rough.
In a sense, it was terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, now I'm so distanced from it. But
sure.
Yes, I would like be sad and cry all the time and it was horrible. And then I'd drown myself in stand-up comedy.
that really is really rough. And it's so interesting that you know, it's such an, I'm trying to kind of figure it out and there's no universal thing. But there's this, what we do as comedians, it's, you know, everyone always says, oh, your life is making people laugh. And it really is. I mean,
right.
There is that kind of, there is joy in the room when you're there.
Yes.
But where that comes and why we're kind of pouring into it comes from so many different angles.
Right.
And so many different places.
Well, I think that everyone has like a moment of either frustration or anger or a moment by meaning a decade or whatever it is growing up. And everybody has their own thing.
Right.
That makes them, can you swear on this?
Yeah, you can swear.
Oh, okay. That basically makes them go like, fuck you. And now I'm going to do comedy.
Yeah. And that's the other thing that's always interesting is that especially when people that were kind of outcasts, to be a comedian, you really, there's a confidence. There's
right.
a real confidence. There is no screw you. I'm the guy going to stand up here and I'm going to tell you.
Right.
And to think that like yourself, like the kid that people weren't talking to or whatever, and just quietly over there, it's almost like, all right, for 11 years, I am going to build up steam.
Yes. and then also in terms of even like alternative comedy, it's sort of like the idea that someone's like, okay, this is what you're going to do. You're going to be an opener, and then you're going to be a middle, and then we're going to do, and then also, I'm similarly like, no.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need your system.
Right.
Like, I... I'll start this other way, and then once the internet meets me halfway,
right?
You know,
yeah.
It's sort of what is so great about like the web, where like you can just put like I started putting videos online, you know, in like 98, 97, 99, whatever, right. Something like that, and those videos started going a little viral. So like,
right.
You know, as a kid in Boston or just a college grad in Boston, I couldn't be on TV, but I could be online. And if somebody thought it was funny, they could forward it.
That's pretty brilliant.
You know,
it's really great, too, that you come out just like, no, I'm not going to play high school. I'm not going to go through. I just found my freedom.
Yeah.
I'm going to take care of something I love and stand up and put it back in the system where there's bullies involved.
Right. You're right. Just like, but as long as it does, you still need empirical. Like, you need to find an audience. You need to make that audience come to you. It's not like you can be like, I'm going to play flute in the street until someone puts me on the Tonight Show.
Right.
Like, you do have to actually have legitimate success, but that success can be defined by the goals you set.
Right.
And then...
And there's no filter. Your own filter, really. You can get right to your audience.
Right. And then if you do something and it's not funny, you're aware of it and you fix it. It's like, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
The difference I feel like when I do a set at like Union Hall is like people often won't laugh if it's not funny,
right?
But they're just not mean about it,
right? I find that too. Like at UCB, I've bombed so many times where a joke will just do nothing,
yeah.
But it's not you never get that feeling like I do in a comedy club where once you do a couple bad jokes in a row, you can feel them starting to like shift in their seat. Like, all right, we're going to go get him now.
Yeah. How dare you?
He's ruining my night.
Well, you know, and also in fairness, they probably paid more and have like a drink minimum.
Yeah.
And like they need $40 worth of entertaining.
Yeah.
And you can do a thing where the agreement is you paid $7.
Right.
I'm going to try new stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know that I'm normally pretty funny and half of this will work.
Right. Right.
You know,
right.
And to me, it's sort of like none of the like stand up, you don't really make your money in New York,
right?
So it's sort of like I don't mind testing out stuff at shows that I or friends put on where it's like pretty inexpensive, but you still know what fails and succeeds,
right? How do you write? Do you kind of write on stage, or do you write
half and half?
Yeah,
it just depends what it is. I'll try to write stuff out. It's funny. What's really funny is when you find a thing that works, and then you go back and you see how you wrote it like a year earlier. You're like, oh my god,
yeah. What was I thinking?
I like, oh wow, I had like these meandering moments that like work great on paper if I'm writing a Woody Allen book,
right?
But you can only have so many like weird asides that are like tangential in a story.
Do you want to make film or that kind of thing? I always kind of sense that from you. I'm only going from perceptions here, but. You know, because you do have a lot of stuff that you kind of put online, and
I do. Well, I certainly want to make a documentary of going to Russia.
That'd be great. Is that really in the works? Like you're actively kind of.
I'm half actively because I'm doing other stuff, but sort of like I haven't. I had like at one. There was like a point at which I was actively like trying to meet with people.
Yeah.
And now I'm actively waiting to try to start doing that when I finish other stuff.
Right. Right.
In terms of film, like I would, you know. Yeah, I would act and stuff, or maybe, I don't know that I don't necessarily, it's not like I wrote a movie that I really want to make or anything.
Right, right.
I do love working on different kinds of projects.
Like, yeah.
Like I really, I wrote a book and that was super fun for me.
Yeah, tell our viewers about your book.
It's a sort of fake advice self-help book called The Will to Whatevs.
Yeah, The Whatevs.
And go on.
They're really funny. I just saw the ones that online.
Yeah.
Like the is video. That where it started?
I sort of had this advice column, and that sort of started from me being a counselor in high school, like working on a crisis hotline.
Right.
And that was like not real. Like, I mean, not that it wasn't real, but meaning like rarely did an actual teenager call and I gave them assistance.
Right.
A lot
right.
of times it was hangups or perverts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, who would call and they'd. And there was one guy who was always locked out of his apartment naked, but he would like start with just like, I'm feeling weird. And then eventually he'd say this thing and be like, goodbye, sir.
Funny.
But yeah, so that sort of out of that came me doing this advice column on my website. And out of that came this sort of self help book that I wrote.
Wow.
And
when did that book come out?
Maybe 2 years ago or so, 3 years ago, something like that.
Is it a cool feeling to see your book in a bookstore?
Yes. And it's great to have written a book, especially since I can't read.
Not in English.
No. Yes. Read only Arabic.
Did it do well? Did it get out there? Did you feel like when people at your shows, did people come up with a copy?
And still, I think, get it. It didn't do... I mean, it did fine. It did as well as a book that was promoted for 2 weeks.
Right.
That came out on paperback.
Right.
That still people, I think, pick up and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it did totally fine. I'd like to write another book.
Yeah.
But I don't really have an idea yet.
Can you get it on Amazon?
Yeah, yeah, you can get it on Amazon on it.
Viewers, listeners really should pick it up because it's really, really, just if the style of these things. And you know, it's funny because the one that I saw was you saying about high school, about surviving high school.
Yeah.
And it says something like, at a certain point, sports.
Oh, yeah.
Well, sports and size won't matter.
Yeah, well, it's true that the things that are very important as a child, like, slowly diminish in their relevance. Like, I'm not that good at soccer, and that was terrible when I was 9.
Right.
But it's fine now. But it really was like, I literally would have been a different level of popularity if I was good at soccer.
Yeah.
You know.
Right, exactly. You would have been king.
I would have been king.
And you wouldn't have been funny anymore.
No, and I wouldn't be funny. Yes.
Do you find that like kids really like it? 16 does kind of seem like the age where people kind of start letting all the stuff go. It's like, all right, we've had our battles for turf.
Right. And I think that they also like, you just start discovering music and things you connect with and everybody is sort of dopey and sad at times.
Yeah.
Like I think until that point, you're just so trying to survive.
Yeah.
And that's when you're probably like, I want to go on a date. And like, you know, you... Yeah. Kind of start being like, it's okay to be sad and you don't have to fight people.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Just, you know, slowly more of the world becomes possible.
Right. I don't have to punch somebody because my dad was mean to me today.
Yes. Exactly.
I'm going to leave Eugene alone.
Yeah.
Did you act in school?
I did theater stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think the two things that sort of helped me probably were starting to do theater.
Uh-huh.
And then also running for senior class president.
Oh, yeah?
Because I was so unpopular, but then that became so funny that it sort of flipped things around. And a lot of people who I think were also like, I don't know, just the idea that, you know, you're always like mad at the popular thing or something. So I think people thought it was pretty funny.
That's funny. Run your campaign that way?
My slogan, which a friend of mine came up for, the slogan was, it's not just a change, it's a mutation. And I put posters all over the school boldly that said that. And that I think, and I came very close to winning. I literally lost by like 20 votes, which is all for the best. The idea that I would have been senior class president is a terrible idea.
Right. You're kind of like Trump, where you just kind of like floated it out there and you lose, but you got all the publicity.
Exactly. And then I was like, oh, okay, this is better now.
Did you see the Herman Cain ad where his guy was
yellow
smoking?
Yellow Flower?
Oh, where the guy was
sorry.
Smoking?
Yeah, yeah. But have you seen Yellow Flower?
No.
When you get a chance.
What is it?
It's... First of all, it's insane.
Oh, when he sang?
No, it's this guy and a horse. It's like this cowboy thing where a guy, or like, it starts with like, there was a time when a man was a man and a man on a horse was just a man on a horse.
Yeah.
Unless he had yellow flowers. And then this guy on a horse rides in and there's some sort of weird thing. And then like... somebody goes like, are those yellow flowers? And then the cowboy's like, let's not make this about color. It's like, you're like, where is this all going?
Weird.
And then it breaks and it's like about like shooting this promo. It's the whole, it's crazy. I mean, it is like what you'd see in a movie about a guy who thinks he's running for president. Like where someone was like, I'm going to break all the rules. Like you feel that in this thing.
And it's Herman Cain's in it?
It's for Herman Cain.
Oh,
made it. He made it. It's him.
Holy cow.
He's not in it.
Right.
But at the end, it's like a guy being like, and he has the weird smile. I think of the weird turning and smile that's
that
in the smoking
smile,
one.
Yeah.
One is so crazy.
It's an insane look. He just kind of like looks at you. First you see the guy, his campaign manager, smoking.
Yeah.
And it looks kind of like one of those anti-smoking ads, like this gross person. Don't be like him.
But I think it's meant to be like so appealing to like the Tea Party who are just like, stop telling me I can't like hit my waterboard my kid.
Right. Exactly.
Like, well...
I can smoke and waterboard if I want
to. Yeah, exactly. I want him to grow up right.
Did you see this morning how he was singing, Herman Cain? He broke into a song?
No.
Yesterday when all the stuff was coming out about his picadillos, he was...
Right. But they were it didn't even sound that... Like, what did he do?
He was denying that there was any sexual harassment charges at
all.
I
saw him on TV describing the weirdest thing where he's like, I said to a lady that she was the height of my wife.
Right.
And the whole thing was so confusing that I couldn't tell what he was denying.
In 6 hours, he went from, I don't know what you're talking about, to describing the incident and what happened. And then as he was under pressure at this event, and he's talking about the height thing and all, and then he breaks into song. He just literally a cappella at the mic just starts singing this song, and there's just eerie silence in the room. You got to see it.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's a man going off the rails.
Wow.
It's really...
Are his... I wonder if... I mean, Romney is going to be the nominee.
I would think so.
Because he's the only one who isn't like, just like, I'm crazy.
Like, yeah.
Give me your... Like, everyone else, you're like, if we gave you our country, who knows what you would do? And he's like, I'll do things that you may or may not like involving taxes.
Right. And he's like, I do wear magic underpants.
Yes.
Mormon underpants.
But... He does, but he doesn't make a big deal of it. I'd rather magic underpants than sing songs when you're put under pressure.
I know. It was just literally just broke into a song. Mm. So you're listening to Come to Papa on Sirius XM 99. I'm the world famous comedian Tom Papa, and I'm with the intergalactically famous Eugene Merman.
Broadcast on the moon.
Have you gone down to the Occupy Wall Street at all?
I haven't seen it. I mean, I've seen it on TV. It would be funny if I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. No, I haven't gone down there, though. I've thought about it. But yeah,
me neither. I ran into it in Washington Square Park. I was taking my kids to the park. And they're like, what is this? I want to get to the slide.
Dissatisfied Americans.
You're right. These are unhappy people.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because I thought of that, you know, like when you looked at stuff from the 60s and you saw people protesting, I always thought, wow, everybody was protesting.
Yeah.
And now that I've got kids and I'm just trying to get to the slide and back, I realize, some people just had shit to do.
Right, right.
And whether you philosophically are behind them or not, you just... I got to get here and get a hot dog and get home.
Yeah, you can't. And there was a day where people brought their kids, I know, to Occupy Wall Street. I read about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's it seems totally reasonable that they're...
Right.
I wish there was like a thing that could be accomplished, like meaning I get why they're really mad and it's so justified, but then like at some point everyone will probably go home.
Right.
And I wonder if anything will happen between now and that moment where there's like the idea of a mandate of like, okay, so you are going to stop being so greedy. You destroy homes.
Right.
Like just some like
one thing
that you can like kind of do. Cause right now it's like, cause I feel like there is this, like I read some article where like, you know, Wall Street people were like, sort of like, I don't know, snarky about it where they're, and it's like, I get it because they're not, because there's this like huge complaint, but you don't know what can be done. But
right.
I think I guess I don't know if it's like Wall Street will go like, okay, we were dicks. Like, I don't know if that's like what has to happen.
We're like, a bunch of guys in suits come out
and just go like, we're super sorry. We were dicks. We're going to set up a no dick fund. I don't know what they can do. I just want there to be something that's like where it doesn't go like, oh, there was this huge liberal movement and then everyone went to sleep.
Right. It got cold out.
Yeah, exactly. And then it got cold out and they were like, okay, well,
I guess we'll shop for Christmas.
Yeah.
I know there's no real one thing you could do.
But there might be. I mean, hopefully somebody will come up with it.
Yeah.
Where they'll be like, we're right before it's too cold. Someone will come up with a demand and someone will fulfill that demand.
Right.
So that it will appear successful.
We want hot chocolate.
Yeah.
At least give us hot chocolate.
If we can't have our homes, we can have a pool made of hot chocolate.
Thank you, rich men. And these big guys in fur coats come out in the morning before they go to work.
Yes.
Pour them all some cocoa.
Yeah. But it is good to see that, like, it's because right now the only things that have been that passionate and that out there is like the Tea Party, which, you know, at best is like libertarian and at worst is like loonies.
Right.
So it's nice to see. This is similar. At best, it's like people who are like, stop robbing us. And at worst, it's active communists who don't get what they're saying.
Right. Exactly. Yelling into their iPhones, down with capitalism.
Exactly. Yeah.
Did you get the new iPhone?
No, I have a what do you call it? An Android. But I might I might switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if anyone listening at Apple wants to send me an iPhone.
EugeneMerman.com. He takes offers.
Yes.
You have a cool website.
Thanks.
I like it. It's this is a really good design. Who did it?
My friend Brian Spinks.
Yeah, he's talented.
He's very good.
Yeah, it's really good. It looks like old timey.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great designer.
Is that you as a baby?
It is, and if you click on it, it sings classic rock songs.
It does.
My old, like, one of the ways that that first like people knew of me was that I created this website because I used to work at this web company, and my office mate who knew Flash and was a designer animated my Russian baby pictures singing all these classic rock songs. The height of all of this was being getting an email from Pete Townsend from The Who.
No.
Because he was like, oh, you sing a Who medley, and then like linked me on his blog. And that was like...
Holy
you know,
that
cow. Was like 2001 or something, and I like I didn't know that that was even like a thing that could happen.
Yeah.
So that was I was really, really delighted.
Holy cow, that's a big one.
Yeah, yeah.
Pete Townsend.
Being like, hello, Eugene. I was like, oh my God.
It's Pete Townsend.
Yeah, exactly.
And would you sing it with a band, or you just sing
No, no,
it?
No. It's like literally me into a computer going like, you know, I can't do it.
Yeah, like a Led Zeppelin song?
A Led Zeppelin song. Yeah, yeah. There's Black Dog and The Who, and it's just like pitched.
Right.
It's me singing really high for like 5 seconds, getting right. words wrong and stuff.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Are you working on anything online now?
No, I mean, not specifically.
Yeah.
Like reading, like I, you know, the last election, I covered stuff for this comedy offshoot of the Huffington Post.
Oh yeah,
and I'd gone to, what did I go? I went to the climate conference maybe last year in Copenhagen for this other like website that sent me to do coverage.
Oh wow!
But right now I'm not, you know, I'm working on, I'm shooting Delocated. We're shooting more episodes now.
Yeah,
and Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, they're both going.
Yeah, and then a pilot for Comedy Central. So that's mostly what I'm. Actively
cool.
working
What's
on.
Your show idea for Comedy Central? Can you talk about it?
You know, I literally don't know if I can or can't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, meaning like,
yeah,
I don't
like
know
if you're allowed to.
Yeah. Yeah, I could. It's a very funny show called Eugene. Is that
There's
specific,
a gentleman
you know?
Named Eugene in it.
Yeah.
So tell me about the show going on at Union Hall.
It's basically... me hosting with different friends and sometimes music.
Cool.
You know, just generally doing new stuff.
Oh, wait. I wanted to ask you about a different show.
Okay.
Because that's a good show and people should go see it.
Sure.
It's in Brooklyn every Sunday and it's a fun place and there's always good people on it. But what's the one that you're doing that I saw in the New Yorker listed?
Oh, the Cabinet
of Wonders.
Cabinet of Wonders. That's a very fun show.
That looks cool.
Yeah, that's a great show. That's something that John Wesley Harding, or his real name is Wesley Stace, started, and it's basically, you know, music readings and comedy. It's at City Winery. We'll do runs of it, and then we've done tours of it as well, but like we just did one. It was really fun.
Yeah,
Roseanne Cash did it. John Hodgman. It was Craig Finn from
Very
the old
cool.
study. Yeah, it was great.
That's
it was a
really,
really
cool
fun show.
It sounds like a good show.
Yeah, he's about to actually I think try to do it for NPR, so it might become like a broadcast thing.
Very
it's
cool.
a very fun show that we've toured around a bunch.
Wow,
and stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you tour solo? Do you go down and
do
stand-up dates?
I do, like at colleges or in random places. Yeah. I like touring with friends, but yeah, I certainly do solo tours as well.
Yeah.
But kind of, you know, I've found that in general, unless it's like, you know, going to a college or something like that, where that it's... That in a sense is just more fun to go with a few friends and then also do that. A show that I want to kind of try to make a show of, like a TV show of touring around and like sort of maybe like an Anthony Bourdainish thing, but with like a few comedians.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So I think that would be fun.
That would be a really good idea. Did you see that one? The Bourdain?
Anthony the Tourgasm?
Bourdain. Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, are you talking about the when they tour around Europe?
The No Reservations. I mean, he tours the world,
right.
Doing like food shows and culture commentary
right.
and stuff.
Do you think you'd add food to your tour?
Yeah, I think it would be almost like that, but it'd be comedians instead of like food people, and it wouldn't all be food, and then there'd be some stand up and stuff.
Would there be hijinks?
There wouldn't be as much hijinks. Like it wouldn't just be all go kart racing.
Uh-huh.
It'd be a lot of times we'd show up to a place and make fun of different cultures in a really astute way. We'd be like, "These guys are kind geniuses, but mean.
They're so snarky. These guys,
but loving, but very loving."
Do you have any desire to go to LA?
I mean, I've been there. Like, I go there. I don't have a desire to move there, if that's
what
you mean.
It is what I mean, because I'm kind of, I'm going through it myself right now.
But you have a show here. You have a bunch of shows here.
I have a show here, and, it could be out there as well. I'm not sure if we're going to make them more here or if we're going to make more out there. And, I kind of have this thing that I came from here, I started here, and creatively, I just feel like it's such a great place.
Yeah.
And I am like, for my act is happy here. Like I,
right.
You know, And but there's so much work out there. There's so many things.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I mean, for me personally, I happen to be on shows that that are out here at Delocated. We shoot that here on location. And then Bob's Burgers is both. It's ISDN line. So we record. So four of the main cast members are out here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we record every week here. And then, yeah, I mean, but it's, and then my pilot, my TV show, I could easily do from here. Yeah. It doesn't need to be out there. But it's true that in general, there's thousands of times more work in LA. But I guess to me, it's sort of like if I can have work here, I just don't care that there's more in LA.
Right.
You know, I don't really like driving.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So there's just like, and I don't like auditioning for things.
Uh-huh. You don't?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, not to say that I never do, but generally... Yeah. Unless it's something that sounds amazing, I don't really want, especially since I'd just rather work on a project with friends.
Right.
So a lot of the advantages of LA don't totally appeal to me.
Right, right.
It's possible that in some period of time, if I wanted to be in movies more or something like that, then I would move and audition.
Right.
But I'm so much happier here.
Yeah.
And I have enough work that I don't have to leave.
Yeah.
You know? So that's to me, like, the question is more like, whether I'm happy and working on stuff more than whether I could be the co-star of Best Friend in a movie that's even, like, pretty good.
Right, right. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. You know what happened is I did a set on Conan, and I got brought out to L.A. to do this pilot for, it was called Come to Papa, which is the name of this show now, because that show only lasted for four episodes and I didn't want to burn the name. So I made a radio show called Come to Papa. But it brought me out there, and just being out there, you know, you just bang around with all the comedians out there and people are just end up on shows and doing different things and you get kind of like circulating around. But then you come here and you're like, oh, but this is so...
There is so much more and so many more people out there.
Yeah.
But out here, it's, I don't know.
Do you feel like there's any sacrifice that you make from being here, or no?
Well, because I haven't really been out there, I bet I would be I would have random small roles in movies that I think are good.
Yeah.
I think if I was out there, there's a chance that would be, that I'd just be part of a world where people are like, hey, do you want to do this?
Right, right.
You know, the same way that out here, people are like, hey, do you want to be in this or come and do that?
Yeah.
But I don't. I mean, in terms of sacrifice, I just don't feel, I just really, I, also my family's in the Northeast.
Like, yeah.
I'm just from the Northeast.
Yeah, me too.
So I don't feel, I know so many people have moved out there and been very happy, and they admittedly, there's so much more work.
Yeah.
And you're in a place where, you know, Mel Brooks could drop by. I mean, it's unlikely. That's maybe not the best example of who will swing by your weird comedy night at a taco stand. But in theory, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But then, you know, I was at a thing on Halloween for my kids. They had this thing in the Village. You know, they do this little Halloween thing on Bleecker. And I was on a hayride with them. I was like, all right, I'll go on. And I was sitting next to Philip Seymour Hoffman with his kids. And he was kind of all incognito. And I was acting cool, like I didn't recognize him. But the whole time I was like, this is such a New York thing. Like, if you're on a hayride in New York, you're next to Philip Seymour Hoffman. If I'm in L.A., I'm next to Kirstie Alley.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, there's also something that L.A. does have, like, you know, when I've been out there, there are like, you know, there's just like events where you're like, what is this? It's like, it's a weird magazine party full of like almost the people that ruin our culture and like three people you adore and can't believe are in the room. And then other people, you're like, I think you're the reason that it's like, that's just, that like children now have sex when they're nine or whatever.
It's really true. It's like, but they're famous and I guess I should be around here.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, who knows? I'm also, it's not like, you can easily just travel there. Like, maybe I can go there and do stuff and it's fine and I have fun and I have so many friends out there.
Yeah.
I just really like New York. I like being able to call a friend and have them meet me a block away.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in LA, like in a lot of places that literally just aren't New York City, that doesn't really happen as much.
It doesn't. You got to make plans
and then
drive it and then go sit there.
Exactly. I can walk out of my home
and
be in a place with friends in 10 minutes, 5 minutes.
It's pretty great.
And I adore that.
Yeah, it really is really great.
Yeah.
Who else on Bob's Burgers? It's Chris and Shaw.
Yeah. John Roberts, John Benjamin, Dan Mintz.
Nice.
Are like that. We're the family. But then like
really
Kevin Kline
people.
Is on it, and he plays like the sort of owner of the town and landlord.
Right.
And tons of guests. Yeah. Like Bill Hader just came in this week. They're getting a lot of really great guests.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So yeah.
You like voice work?
Yeah, it's yes. Though yeah. I particularly like it working like Bob's Burgers, and I did this other show with Lauren Bouchard, who's the creator.
Uh-huh.
He's particularly fun to work with because we'll do the scene and then we get to improvise a bunch.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, but I do voice work is pretty fun.
Yeah,
because it's really it's both rewarding and simple.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah,
and you get to see yourself like a cartoon.
Exactly. You get to be part of something fun without having to with less memorization.
Where are you working tonight? Are you working tonight?
Where am I? No, tonight. No. I'm not. This week. What am I doing tomorrow? I forget. I have it somewhere.
How long...
I did shows like every night, like the last week or two or
yeah.
something, and then I was in London for 2 weeks. Doing
oh, yeah?
shows, doing actually the Brooklyn show, Pretty Good Friends. I went
oh,
out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw you tweeting about that.
Yeah.
How'd it go?
It was really fun.
Was it?
Yeah, it was great. We were in this little theater, or it was like a small complex where there's like a bunch of spaces, and we were in this cabaret space in that theater. But it was great. We had
nice.
A lot of awesome guests.
Wow.
John Benjamin came out for a week and did it, and Kurt Braunohler, I don't know if you know him.
No, I don't.
He has a show on IFC that's about to come out that he's just started to work on. He's super funny. But yeah, we were doing stuff out there, and then different musicians and guests and comedians did the show.
Oh, nice. And yeah. a lot of people show up?
Yeah. I mean, the space only fit 140, but yeah,
right.
it was pretty full and
oh,
really fun.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Really cool. Is there a good scene for those kind of shows over there?
Maybe. You know, I think they have so many, like, one-man show type things.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how many, like, shows they have where, like, a few, like... Where like several comedians who've been doing comedy for a while perform together.
Right. Yeah.
They might. I don't know exactly how they do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's certainly like a bunch of that sort of thing. And Edinburgh also is like where
yeah.
people do tons of like, they have just very elaborate one man shows.
Have you done Edinburgh?
I did it once. It was
yeah.
like a lot like comedy boot camp.
Yeah.
Where it's like, have you done Edinburgh? Have you been
no,
out there?
No, it's a long haul.
You're performing every night doing an hour long show in what is essentially a weird wet cave, like literally made of stone. That they pump electricity into for the month.
Jeez.
And it's...
You got to promote your show like crazy.
Yeah, it's somewhere between rewarding and unnecessary, basically.
Right.
But if you're British, that's how you become a star. That's how you make a living there.
Right,
You
right.
go every year until one year you really connect and break through, and then you spend your time touring.
Right, right. It seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that you're really motivated by the stuff that you just love to do.
Yeah.
Not really motivated by, I have to make it or I have to make a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
It seems like you really, all your things you kind of are saying kind of come from, what am I going to do that's going to make me creatively happy?
Yes, that's definitely true. But that is also with the idea that all these things will make money. Like, meaning, mm-hmm. meaning it's true that I don't care about... like doing the thing that would make me the most, but I just uh-huh. care about doing something I really like that will make me reasonably well.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm very happy to be on a cartoon on Fox and like all these different
right.
things, but it's true that I'm much more motivated. I had like terrible grades as a kid. Like,
uh-huh.
you know, I had like I graduated with a 2.1 grade point average, and that's because my grades picked up my last year or two.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I found this thing, like I had like F's and D's like every I was just terrible, and I've never been very good at motivating myself to do things I don't want to.
Right.
So in that same sense, like, to me, going to do an audition to be a character that I would have to actually do for years
right.
sounds terrible,
yeah.
you know, but working on some pilot of mine or a show of a friend's
yeah.
is super fun.
Right. That, you
so
know, yeah.
I don't just vaguely want to be in comedy.
Right.
I just want to be doing things that I enjoy, but also are profitable.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry that this interview didn't pay anything.
That's fine, because it was really fun. That's the other two.
Right. Well, I really appreciate you coming in. This was
sure.
really great. And it was a really cool way to
yeah.
actually finally meet you.
Yes. Super
yeah.
nice. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to you
All
next
right.
time.
Bye.
Come to Papa with guest Eugene Merman is now over. If you like Tom, make sure to check out his brand new one-hour stand-up special, Tom Papa Live in New York City, on Sunday, January 8th at 10 p.m. on Comedy Central. Come to Papa.